From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Ukrainians voted in elections and chose comedian and television star Volodymyr Zelensky as their new president. Zelensky's landslide win over incumbent Petro Poroshenko is indicative of a mass dissatisfaction in Ukraine. In his concession speech, Mr. Poroshenko said, "I personally and my entire team is ready to stand shoulder to shoulder with the president in all his decisions that benefit Ukraine's national interests." Zelensky is known for playing the role of president on television. But the newly elected leader, who's never before held office, will have to contend with a long list of issues, including dealing with Russian aggression on Ukraine's border. My guest is David Marples, a distinguished university professor at the University of Alberta in Canada, specializing in Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you.
So first, how do you explain this landslide victory by Zelensky? In the weeks leading up to the election, we had heard that this could happen, but when it actually happened over the weekend, when the election took place, it wasn't a close victory, it was a landslide victory.
Yes. In the first round of the elections on March the 31st, there were around 39 candidates running. And at that time, Zelensky got 30%. And was well ahead of Poroshenko, who got around 15.6%, and then several others behind. So it was evident that he was looking likely to win, but it wasn't really clear of the depth of feeling against Poroshenko as continuing as president. And I think that's what we found in the second round. I don't perceive this vote so much as a pro-Zelensky vote. I don't think he's had time really to build up his popularity to that level within the country. I see it as an anti-Poroshenko vote, a very emphatic one, which means that the population is very weary and disillusioned by the policies of the past 5 years, which they see as epitomized by the current presidency and his entourage, the whole group of people around him and the oligarchical system in the country, bringing about corruption, which has reached epidemic levels. But I also see it as a vote on living standards, poverty, wage structure, prices in stores and things of that nature, because I think Ukraine has become the poorest nation in Europe today by IMF evaluation. Perhaps not always the best evaluation to use, but in this case, they do it by GDP per head of population. So it's a sad situation for Ukraine. They can actually see rich people around them, but most of the population is really struggling.
So let's get some political background for those who aren't as familiar with Ukraine's recent past. Poroshenko came to power after a bloody revolution in 2014 that essentially removed from power a pro-Russian leader, Viktor Yanukovych. So Poroshenko was supposed to represent this new chapter for Ukraine, right?
He was perhaps a compromise figure back in 2014 in the summer when he became president. By the time he became president, the uprising was basically over, but over 100 people had been killed in the central square of Kiev. Crimea had been annexed by Russia, and a conflict had been broken out in the Donbass eastern region of Ukraine, where separatist regimes took power. And there was a bloody confrontation in the summer of 2014. It's continued with heavy fighting until the spring of 2015. After that, an armistice was reached, but there's been spasmodic fighting ever since. So Poroshenko came to power at this very difficult time with a promise to institute reforms, clean up corruption, and bring an end to the war with Russia and with the rebels in the Donbass. None of this has actually taken place. And Poroshenko himself has taken on more of a role of protector of Ukrainian national interests, the language, the religion, the army, that was basically his election platform. And this failed clearly to appeal to most of the population, which wasn't really looking for that. And I think they're looking for a dramatic change, I would say, to the extent that they rejected completely this president and elected a complete newcomer with no political experience. I think in general, one can say that Ukrainians often change presidents. They've done it three times now. The only president that managed to survive a second term was Leonid Kuchma back in 1999. But he was running against the leader of the Communist Party. And at that time, I think there was a clearly definable opposition figure who was actually disliked more than the incumbent president. So this time there was no such animal in place. And the choice for many people was quite simple. They'd rather have someone they don't know than someone they know and have rejected.
As far as you know, what was Russia's role in this latest election? You know, there's been a lot of talk here in the United States about Russia's election interference in the U.S. It's been documented that it was a concerted effort to polarize, worsen the polarization in the nation. I imagine where Ukraine is concerned, right next door to Russia, where Russia has such strong, even stronger interests, that there were likely very strong attempts by Russia to interfere in Ukraine's elections?
Well, I would say it was surprising to me how little Russia paid open attention to this election. It didn't really make overt statements about who it would like to see in power. That is not to say that the Russian propaganda campaign over social media, which has been attacking Ukraine constantly for the past 5 years, was not continuing to do that. That was certainly the case. But there was no official campaign in Russia to support one candidate or another, such as there was in 2010, for example, when Russia supported Yanukovych. My feeling is that Russia is not completely dissatisfied with the outcome of this election. They did not really want Poroshenko back. There was absolutely no point of conciliation between Poroshenko and Vladimir Putin, and Poroshenko had made it perfectly plain that Russia was the enemy and the other, and that Ukraine was going in a different direction, whether Russia liked it or not, to the European Union. And in his view, it should also go to NATO. So Russia didn't really respond. And it's in contrast to what happened in the United States back in 2016. And, to be honest, I was a little surprised at Russia's tactics, but that certainly seems to be a calculated move. Sit back and see what happens.
So what is Russia engaged in currently on the border with Ukraine? Does that war continue? I mean, there have been Russian fighters battling Ukrainian soldiers, but Russia had distanced itself, saying that those weren't Russian soldiers, when there's plenty of documentation showing that it was indeed Russian soldiers fighting Ukrainian soldiers on the border and attempting to grab as much territory as possible. Is that war still actively continuing?
It is, but it's on a different kind of level today. I would say that the regular Russian army at the moment is not intervening in this war. What you have are rebels who've set up separatist regimes, not recognized by anyone really worldwide, and not even recognized by Russia for that matter, as independent states. And they are receiving heavy weaponry from Russia and using it against the regular Ukrainian army forces.
So proxy soldiers, in a way.
They're proxy soldiers. And in fact, when Russia was heavily involved in Ukraine, it also used mercenaries to a large extent to fight those battles, for the logical reason that then Russia could claim no responsibility for their presence there, just as they had the same role in Syria quite recently. And, many were killed there, and Russia claimed that it was nothing to do with them. So Russia's tried to maintain some distance from the war in the Donbass, but in fact, the rebels could not survive without Russian support. And I think that is absolutely well known. And Zelensky has immediately appealed to the Russian government to meet and come to an agreement on how they can end this war. Putin then responded that it was not their war. But I think it's perfectly evident to the new Ukrainian president that Russia is very much behind this battle. So I think that there are opportunities to make some progress. Whether it could actually be ended in the immediate future, I don't know. There could be more exchanges of prisoners of war. There could be a new armistice. And I think Russia would be prepared to go back to the Minsk Accords of spring 2015, where it took part with the leaders of the so-called republics and with Ukraine, and with the participation of France and Germany, and of course with the host nation being Belarus, to come up with some kind of agreement for an end to the war, where all major troops would be moved backward. Ukraine would eventually restore its own borders, its eastern border with Russia, and also it would agree to give some kind of self-rule or autonomy to the breakaway regions. So that's really where it could possibly go, but it couldn't go there without active Russian participation and the will of the new Ukrainian president to communicate with Russia for that agreement to come into place.
So what do we know about Mr. Zelensky, this new president who plays the role of, or has played the role of, a president on television? I mean, I suppose if the U.S. can elect a reality TV star, why not Ukraine electing a person who plays a president on television? But outside of his TV persona, what do we know about him and what he stands for? What has he said during his campaign platforms in terms of the issues he stands for?
Well, he's not really come up with a totally clear platform, other than that, you know, a few basic principles that he would keep to the kind of pro-European Union policy and the pro-Western policy. And yet he would try to negotiate with Russia. He has said that if Ukraine was to join NATO, he wouldn't take any steps to do so without a national referendum, which would be a major step, because at the moment, a national referendum probably wouldn't come out completely in favor of that. So it's very marginal, though, as to what he's actually going to do. We don't really know yet who his team is, whether there'll be any people related to previous governments. Poroshenko has claimed, as you said at the beginning of the program, that he's prepared to stand by and assist. I think that's probably the last thing that Zelensky wants to see, and it's the last thing that most of Ukrainian voters would like to see. They would like to see that group gone. So he's gone through the election by making very few promises. I mean, the whole campaign was a little surreal, with video images, a debate in a sports stadium, with a lot of fanfare that really amounted to very little. And you constantly see social media clips featuring Zelensky giving brief comments, but nothing in depth, really. There are several things about him that are quite different from the usual Ukrainian president. He is a Russian-speaking president. He is Jewish by background. Both his parents are Jews, quite well educated. They're from the Kryvyi Rih industrial region, metallurgical center of Ukraine.
And he's very young, right? He's only 41?
He's only 41. He has a wife who's, I think she's about the same age or 40 years of age as well. Also from the same area. And actually seems to be an ethnic Ukrainian. I think in many ways, it's not an unhealthy situation for Ukraine, given its multicultural makeup and the way over the past 5 years, a form of ethnic nationalism has been propagated that clearly is not appealing to a lot of the population.
How but refreshing, in fact, compared to the rest of or some countries in Europe, I should say.
Absolutely. And yet, on the other hand, he is quite clearly a populist politician, you know, someone who's come to power on a wave from the population, just like he did actually in his comedy series. I mean, it was because the history teacher that he portrays in the television program criticized the existing presidency and the corruption within the country, and then was elected president. And now, you know, you're really not quite sure where the TV program ends and reality begins, and who really is the real Volodymyr Zelensky. I don't think we know that yet. And I think that's something we'll find out over the next few months ahead.
I want to pick up on what you said about the economy, because often those very critical bread and butter issues that make a difference in people's day-to-day lives and just being able to get by, naturally reflect how they might react at the polls. Why has Ukraine become Europe's poorest country? And what did Poroshenko do to make that happen? Do people hold him responsible?
I think they do to some extent. I mean, partly it is because of the conflict in the east. I mean, Ukraine has lost two of its major eastern cities, Donetsk and Luhansk. Donetsk being the center of the Ukrainian coal industry, but also many other industries. I mean, it was probably the third largest city in Ukraine back in 2014. And the kind of mess that's ensued after 5 years of conflict. You have 13,000 dead. You have a massive internal refugee program. About a million and a half people, perhaps even more than that today, are now internal refugees or people who've actually left that region for Russia or other parts of Ukraine. You know, that is on the one hand. On the other hand, Ukraine has adhered to certain agreements through its association agreement with the European Union, which have forced Ukraine to maintain certain standards within its industries. That has led to layoffs, unemployment, shutting down of major factories that don't meet European standards. And this has had an adverse effect on the Ukrainian economy. So you could say, in fact, the move towards Europe has not so far been very beneficial for Ukraine. I mean, in the long term, this is expected to change. You also have a situation where Ukraine is deeply in debt to the IMF, and it's going to, a large part of its annual budget is made up of simply paying off its debts, the interest on its debts to the IMF. So that is where Zelensky has to start from. I mean, it's not simply that he can raise wages immediately or he can increase employment and start up moribund factories. I think it's got to be on another kind of level, where he limits damage for a couple of years, tries to get rid of this massive debt, and then starts to build again. And to do that, he has to consider what to do with relations with Russia. Russian imports still make up a large part of the Ukrainian economy. As an individual country, Russia is still the major trading partner of Ukraine, despite the fact that regular communications, transport between Russia and Ukraine, for example, has been completely curtailed. So how do you deal with that situation? Is it possible to follow the kind of policy that, let's say, Leonid Kuchma pursued, where Ukraine was somewhere between this east-west axis and could offer some kind of collusion with both sides? That is, you might be an associate member of the Eurasian Economic Union. You might be associate member of the European Economic Union, and sort of pave the way to go between the two, whether that's still possible or whether Ukraine, in fact, has to choose one way or the other. Because I don't see how Ukraine can completely abandon its relationship with Russia and survive economically. That would be something akin to Canada breaking off relations with the United States.
Right. How is Zelensky, with no political experience, going to walk this very critical tightrope and make all of these things happen? Because essentially the population has put a huge faith in him. Is he, as far as you can tell, I know the election is very fresh, but as far as you can tell, does he seem to be surrounding himself with the kind of experienced political leaders that you think will help him carry out the agenda the population expects from him?
Yeah, so far I think it looks like he is making wise choices, but it's not just his own appointment. The problem with Ukraine is it's a kind of combined power between the president and the parliament, and the parliamentary elections don't take place until October. So I think his main role right now is to build up a party bloc he's actually going to be called Servant of the People, the same title as his TV program. And he started this, right? He started this. So Poroshenko, of course, also has his own bloc in parliament. Tymoshenko has her Batkivshchina, or Fatherland Party. There are numerous party factions in the Ukrainian parliament. And it's very important that Zelensky either gets a parliamentary majority or at least a party with a plurality of votes in the October elections, I think his chances are reasonably good. Opinion polls suggest already that the party is competitive as far as parliamentary elections are concerned. Once he's done that, then you can really start talking about making policy for the future, because without it, you're going to get the old story of a conflict between president and parliament where nothing really gets done. And that was the case back in the Yushchenko presidency of 2005 to 2010, where, you know, you had a parliamentary bloc that was blocking everything that the government did, even though it was a reformist government in theory. So that, I think, is the first major step. And we won't know how that's going to work out until the elections in October. And after that, I think you may see more certain steps.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and helping to shed some light on these issues. Thanks so much.
A pleasure.
My guest has been David Marples, Distinguished University Professor at the University of Alberta in Canada, and he has an expertise in Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus. We've been discussing the recent election results in Ukraine. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.